Thank you for tuning in. This is Music Industry Insights. I am Evan Murray. You can get a hold of me at evan@musicindustryins.net. The podcast you are listening to now is with a major booking agent based out of the country of Germany, even though this interview was held in Spain. Michael Thiessen has worked for major label companies. He's done a lot, and it's all in this conversation. I don't want to give away too much of the details. I know in some of the other podcasts, I have literally like almost given the entire conversation away. But Michael's conversation was great. Michael has an opinion, and you'll hear he's got a really big personality too. Michael Thiessen is a major player in the rock and roll industry in Europe. I'm sure in the United States, I'm sure his networks go around the world, as that's a very common thing that happens nowadays, where people are just simply connected because of the way the internet works. Michael's a big dog, so this is important information, especially if you are an independent artist, or if you are a manager that is taking care of independent artists, or if you're a music lover, or you're just a person who is interested in the details. Michael has a big personality, and Michael has a lot to say. So this was a real pleasure to talk to Michael and get to know Michael. I actually got to know Michael through a band called Thunder Mother. Thunder Mother is a all-female rock band. And I mean rock, like AC/DC, like Judas Priest, like real hard rock and roll. And Thunder Mother is based out of Sweden, all-girl rock band. You should definitely check them out. Michael is their booking agent. So if you see their shows where they're playing some nice big festivals and they're touring constantly, that is Mr. Thiessen, Michael Thiessen, behind that. As always, take what you can out of this, extract the information. Michael has some serious, serious pointers for you independent bands. He also has some serious truth and reality here. Like, the music industry is a business, and we need, that cannot be a soft and gentle conversation. It's just literally numbers and math. And we have to be honest about that, because when we're not honest about that, that's how bands get misled and get mistreated and end up spending money on the wrong things and the wrong people. This is a business, and it works off people making money. If you're an artist, the reason why people want to work with you is because they want to make money off of you. Okay? That's what fame is. Fame is when people buy your things and other people make money from it. You know, of course, yeah, you're in the middle, right? Like, you're the artist. You're the one perpetuating the business, creating the cash flow, all of these things. But it's a business. And the only reason why people want to work with you is because they want to make money off of you. And don't forget it. So, without further ado, take what you can, extract what you can, and enjoy it. Here is Michael, Mr. Michael Thiessen.
Hello, Michael. How you doing?
It's okay. Monday. Monday, yeah. Ellen.
It's the curse. It's the curse of Monday.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, please introduce yourself, Michael. Tell us about
yes.
you.
Yes. I am Michael Thiessen, based in Hamburg, northern Germany. I am 36 years old. I am working actually not for ages in the music industry. I started after I was working for Siemens in China. I decided to, you know, try something else, follow my dedication, follow my love, if we can put it like this. And started working in the music industry in 2014. So not long ago, 7 years in this circus. Some people might call this rock and roll circus. Since 7 years, different positions, different companies all over Germany. And that's pretty much it about me.
Okay, so when we come into booking agency, like I'm gonna, it's an interesting topic, because you're one of the most sought after people for you know, up and coming musicians to find or to, you know, to find to work with. And then also, I guess, you know, also for top tier bands, you take a lot of the responsibilities off their shoulders as well. So let's talk about the vetting process of how you come to work with a band. Like, can you take me through a little bit of a process? Like, I'm a band. I want you to be my booking agent. What do I need to supply to you, or what do I need to do to get working with you?
I mean, now I know how it works. I was in a band for 15 years as well before I started. You know, I'm a musician myself. That's why I said in the beginning, after I worked for Siemens, I followed my dedication. So that's a story about how a band is found or about application with bands. The reality, the really reality is that 99% of the bands get found. So all these application, what bands are doing from, you know, themselves, it's a big dilemma, right? A band is looking for a booking agent to get gigs, to get shows, to get bigger, right? But a booking agent or a booking agency is looking for a band who is already at a certain level, right? So this is a real dilemma, because both looking for something else. And when a band, most of the bands who apply, who sent me mails, most of the times are very DIY like, right? They don't have a management, they haven't toured a lot, they probably haven't released anything or just preparing to release something. So especially nowadays, you need to have a certain level, you know, to get on the radar of labels, of managements, of booking agencies. So it's a real dilemma of new upcoming bands, right? If you don't have something super unique, special, which, you know, I see or everybody sees straight away, then it's very, very hard for bands approaching a booking agency. And if that's you haven't, you know, toured and all that stuff.
And that's because, like, basically an agent is looking to, like, it's a job. So you're looking that you have to make money, and the band has to be making money for you to make money. And if the band isn't making money, you're not going to be able to make any money for them either. Is there any kind of, like, have you ever been in an instance where you see a band, you're like, yeah, you know what? Like, this band isn't anything yet, but I want to work with them because I believe they might be something in the future. Is there instances like that? Or has it mostly been like you're looking at a business angle, like, okay, that band is doing quite well. Let me approach them and see if I can start booking them.
Yeah, I mean, it's both. If a band is doing quite well, you know why. They have something, right? They have done their work already, and approaching, you know, you see there is something going on. That's nowadays, that's the most important thing, right? That you see there's something going on and they take it seriously, right? As you say, 100% correct. In the end, it's a business, and my company also needs to make money, right? Money is always very unsexy in this business, but without money, no honey, right?
Yeah.
So it's it's also a very important, you know, aspect in this business, to call it a business, and that bands are also aware of that we're not doing this only for fun. It's a lot of fun, for sure. We follow our dedication and love, but it's a lot of work too. And when a band is very small, you need to see something. You need to believe in them, because you invest a lot of time. Time is always money. And you don't see anything on return for the next month or years even, right? So it's a lot of belief. If it happened to me that I signed, actually, I mean, as I said before, I'm not for ages in this business. 7 years, it's not a long time, in different position. I wasn't always a booking agent. I started as an A&R assistant, then did the product management for a label. And then I started, like, booking business, because I saw a lot of, you know, nowadays it's not about selling records anymore. Nowadays is, you know, bands making money out of life. So life is your friend, And that's where I saw a lot of potential to help out and to have that, you know, let's put it like the vision. You also like booking agent and management, it's very, very close to each other nowadays. Because as a manager, you want to, you know, push your band into certain markets to reach a new level. And this is what the booking agent does, right? It pushes into certain markets. If you have never played Canada or Taiwan, it's very hard to sell anything in Taiwan. So you need to be present in Taiwan. You need to play Taiwan. You even need to bring out a special edition for Thailand, especially Japan. That's the case with Japan, right? So that I signed someone straight from the scratch who was no one, I have to admit I haven't done it yet. But speaking, you just introduced it, speaking of Thunder Mother, when I saw these girls, they had already a little, you know, name. They, you know, pulled like in Hamburg 250 people or something. So I knew there was already, they were on a certain level. But I saw straight away the USP, the unique selling point. I saw the vision they also share with me, like the rock and roll attitude for girls, kicking ass like men and all that stuff in this world where we're living nowadays. I think that's something super unique. I saw it straight away, and that's why I signed them straight away from the scratch.
And so when you were in working as an assistant to an A&R, like, I mean, you must have that must have gave you a great detail of depth of information about how to understand how well a band is doing, or to understand like how metrics may work, or like, you know, just the overall of how to really kind of, you know, see what the potential is maybe. Can you tell me a little bit about that? And then also like transitioning, like did you want to be an A&R person, or did that just kind of slip away and you just found yourself being an agent? Like how did those transitions happen?
The nice thing about being a booking agent is you see numbers straight away, right? You book a show, you sell tickets, and you have income straight away. And you are very important to the artist because you pay them their rent most of the times, right? You get straight income. A&R is a lot about, you know, visioning for the next years. Where could the band be and all that stuff? Of course, it's in booking. Speaking of booking as well, you know, you make a 5-year plan or something, but you see the results way more fast than being, you know, a visionary A&R ring kind of guy. And that's what I loved, right? I'm a very, I'm also a creative boy, but I am more like getting things done. Right? Having, you know, a routing, playing, you know, where could they play, talking to people, organizing. I love organizing. That's what a booking agent should love, to organize things, right? And that's why I started as an A&R assistant for Napalm Records. And then Napalm Records just started their booking agency called Napalm Events. And that's, you know, where I saw huge of potential, and this was back in 2015, and I saw huge of potential to develop bands. It's also A&R-ing, right?
Oh, yeah.
And to make money, right? Because with selling records, speaking of Spotify, selling streams, that's very, very, very hard nowadays to make a dime.
Right. And let's talk about Europe. Like, you're working in Europe primarily, or are you working in like other countries as well?
I'm working worldwide, okay. But I have in every country I have my partners, right? Oh, so for example, USA, for me, it's not very, you know, attractive, or it's not, it doesn't make a lot of sense that I go to, I don't know, Boston or Washington D.C. or New York to approach the venues by my own. I have my booking agency who I'm dealing with. Same with France, same with Netherlands, Belgium, Eastern Europe, even Austria. I have a partner who's dealing, you know, local businesses, local booking agency I am cooperating with. But everything comes to my plate, on my table, and I just do the organization and the coordination and communication worldwide.
Wow. So let's talk about that a bit. Like, What territories are you seeing that are like, do you have a kind of like a bird's eye that way in which territories are operating and like what genres are like, say like when you're making these decisions about how you're going to plot something, like, can you see how different territories are different? And can you talk to me a little bit about where you think like, you know, rock is doing really well versus say like folk music or something? Can you tell me, talk to me a little bit about that?
I mean, rock and roll, that's a nice thing about Germany. Germans love rock music, right? That's why a lot of rock bands doing very well in Germany. And Germany is, it's a very nice country to tour because we have, it's a big country with many nice venues, lots of city, lots of possibilities, lots of people who love music. So I would go for it, for Germany is definitely a rock and roll territory. Spain, speaking of Spain, I'm living right now in Spain because my wife is Spanish, and that's why we're here for half a year now, heading back to Hamburg in September. So Spain is a little bit tricky with rock and roll music, right? You also, of course, have fans and all that stuff, but over here it's reggaeton and all these, you know, Spanish kind of things. So that's the same as France, and also like these territories and countries are very much concentrating about their own stuff, right?
So right.
Oh, that's why you sometimes have Spanish, you know, you translate your lyrics to Spanish language, happened a lot of time in the history. And France, same, it's a lot of the French market. I'm not sure how many percentage they have on local artists. I would even say 80 or 85% are, you know, France-based bands who take place in France. If you are not Metallica or Guns N' Roses or Iron Maiden, right?
Right.
But yeah. So Germany, rock and roll, France, Spain, it's like local, and then Eastern Europe, it's a different market as well. But you are right. All these markets have their own kind of flair and their own kind of
characteristics.
Characteristics, that's about you. In every market, you need to push different buttons to make
it happen. And how do you gain that knowledge? Is this a trial and error type of like way of doing business?
Totally. Okay. Totally. Okay. It's trial and error. It's nothing else. It is. Honestly, it's like everybody could do that job. You just need to be, you know, you can't learn it. It's just experience and trial and error principle, right? For example, you have a festival. I did a festival in Tunisia, right? At my very, very beginning. So I'm the type of guy, if I am talking with someone, I'm trusting them, right? So in Tunisia, it was like, we will transfer you the money, don't worry. And then the money didn't came, right? And the band needed to fly. I got the tickets and all that stuff. And then in the very heat of the moment, they just didn't pay, right? And then he was promising me huge times, big times, that the money will come next week. Of course, money never came. And this is, like you said, try and error. I never do a festival which I haven't dealt before with, you know, just on goodwill and say you can pay me afterwards. So this is something which I learned the hard way, that, you know, trust is one thing, but being sure that the money is there is another thing.
So right.
It's a lot of try and error in this business, totally.
And when you're doing it, like, so the thing is like, hey, when you're setting up a tour, let's talk a little bit about also like, you know, like the warm-up bands, the opening acts, as we call it. So how does that play a role inside of a band's tour? So say like you're working with one of your bigger acts, you got them plotted for like, say like, you know, a, you know, 15 date tour or something like that. Are you thinking about warm-up acts? Are you looking to sell a spot? Like how are you thinking about that, Michael?
If I book my bands to a support act or the other way around?
No, so, like you booked, like you have one of your main bands and you have booked them a tour, say like 15 date tour. Are you guys considering about selling a spot to let someone open up, or are you guys thinking about warm up acts at all or anything like that?
I actually don't like buy-ons. right? This is what it's called, buy on, you pay to play. So I personally don't like this. It's not like kind of my rock and roll heart bleeds if I sell a band, you know, for example, I band X Epsilon, I say you can play in front of Thunder Mother, I need to pay me 400 euros, right? Mm. It's kind of hard. Sometimes it makes sense for both sides, right? Mm. Because if a band is taking it really seriously, right? And they have a label, then the label is paying tour support, it's called, right? They have a budget calling tour support. And if band X is playing in front of band Y, the label is willing to pay this amount of money that they are, you know, support of these bands, because you get a lot of attention. Yeah. Marketing, right? You get everywhere where the poster is distributed, your name is on it. And so if it's a band, if really the band needs to play, I have a bad feeling. If there's a label behind them and they're taking it really seriously, then it's absolutely fine for me that they, you know, the label is paying, because then we know they take it seriously. They're putting out their own ads. They, you know, helping in selling tickets and all that stuff.
Well, and I guess that's the thing too. And I think you just touched on something, because it's something that we try to really emphasize at the showcase conference level, when, you know, you have these indie bands, DIY bands coming in and they're looking for opportunities. And it's really about really trying to make people understand like, hey, this is a business, and how serious are you going to take this? Because if you're going into this, it's no different than like, say, opening a restaurant or starting any other business. Like, you're going to have to invest in it, not only your time, but a lot of your money. And I mean, the thing is, like, I really do appreciate your sentiments there, because there is a very clear distinction between a band that is not prepared for what the future may bring and someone who's very serious about what they're doing. And I mean, the people that are very serious about what they're doing is a very small percentage as well. You know, like people that actually see the reality coming, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. The reality sometimes it's very unsexy, right? Mm. Because if you're playing in a band, you have this, you know, idea of
the movie idea.
The idea of that just needs to be the right guy, an A&R guy. He finds us and then we are AC/DC, the new AC/DC. Yeah. But it's so much more, right? And as you say, you need to see it as a business. Otherwise, you need to see it as a hobby, and that's totally fine. I mean, that's one of the most nicest hobby you can have.
Ever,
music, hang around with your gang, having fun and all that stuff. See it as a hobby, totally nice, totally fine. But if you want to take it seriously, then you need to, you know, sweat and pay and being, you know, on that run for the long term and not for the short run.
Yeah, I wish, like, you know, I was a musician back in the day too, like a long time, like, you know, when I was touring and stuff. And one of the things I wish I could have understood when I was doing this, because I spent a lot of money organizing people and traveling and trying to gain opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I wish I just knew the guys in the bands I was playing, and they just really didn't have a clue about, you know, like that kind of the same determination, you know? So when I see young bands now and they ask me about agencies, labels, and, you know, we bring lots of people together in the showcase conferences, like lots of professionals to talk and to share knowledge and opportunities. It's just that it's just sometimes like bands just don't get it. Like, it doesn't matter how much you tell them, like, hey, this isn't a movie. You know, this is a business. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they just swim right through it, you know? It's just
and I was the same. That's why I totally understand. I was the same when I was, you know, I was always in my band back in the days. I was the guy who, you know, did the organizational stuff. And I spent nights over nights sending mails to clubs, to agencies, to labels. I never got a response. Funny thing, like a couple of weeks ago, I got, you know, I logged in my old band account and I saw the mails which I wrote back in the days. They are similar to the mails I get nowadays, right? But now I see the full picture. It was fucking funny, because now I understand why all these labels and agency never responded to me, because they checked it out. We check every mail I get. I check it out. I really try hard to answer everyone because I know back in the days how happy I was when I got a response, even a negative response.
It's like Santa Claus, right?
But it's like I always try to, always speaking honest is very hard. So if some bands, send you a mail and you see straight away that's nothing, You can't say to them, guys, you will never make it. Just see it as a hobby and have fun. So if you do this, they are hurt. And you don't want to hurt someone because they put a lot of dedication in this kind of thing and a lot of work. And this needs to be appreciated as well. But yeah, I know I can feel with them, with the people, with the bands who sending, but it's very hard. Musicians, I always think how can they know? I didn't know back in the days. So how could they know, right? They're just doing music and they're working in a different industry. And, their dream is to make it with the music, but how could they know?
They're running away from their lives or their parents. They're rebelling as well. So it's like, it's all of this calamity. Why you're in a band, why you're a musician. There's so many different reasons why you got there. Not only because you love music, but it's like, cause you love partying, cause you love travel. Cause you hate the way the kids treat you at school, or you hate the way your parents talk to you, or what, all these things, but let's talk about what it is that makes a band. Let's talk about that, Michael. Like, give me the things that you think are absolutely essential for a band to have, in their toolbox, the skill sets or the looks or what. Tell me what you think.
I always say, for me, a band needs to have, of course, talent. Talent is the thing, right? A band needs to have. We don't need to talk about that. Mm-hmm. Talent, I always say, and there are a lot of bands out there who would deserve way more, but they're still on a level where you think, why? Why? And then I always say, you need to have talent combined with persistence and patience. That's the thing, what you need to have. You need to, you need to work your ass off. You need to tour. You need to, live off small money, right? You need to take the risk of being a full-time musician, because there's a transition. One day you will find yourself where you need to go all in, or you continue to see it as a part-time thing, right? But history has shown all the bands who completely went all in and took that risk, only they made it. Only they made it.
Right.
Talent combined with persistence and patience, because nothing works from now to tomorrow. You work your ass off for plenty of years, and all of a sudden, something happening, right? And this is because you continued to play and to keep the band up. Most of the bands who didn't make it because they split up. That's the thing.
Do you still believe in this phrase, paying your dues? Like a band has to pay their dues. Do you still believe that?
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. I mean, you need to tour. You need to have these van experiences, right? You need to go the hard way, the long run with playing small clubs, and all these experience is absolutely needed to make it big. And every band who is big nowadays, let's put it in the rock circles, right? In the rock and roll circles, of course, hip hop and pop, there are different examples, right? Where you have the major label power behind you and you have a hit, and then you can make it. But speaking of rock and roll, you need to do the hard way. I don't know any example who made it, like wrote a song and made it to the top. All these bands like AC/DC, Metallica, Iron Maiden, and everyone else.
Yeah.
Beatles. See, back in the days, it's exactly the same as it is nowadays for me, right? You need to be patient and you need to hard work. That's the thing.
Well, I mean, this is kind of invigorating talking to you, because you're really, you know, your energy and the way that you're understanding and the way the kind of information I'm gathering from you is that rock and roll is far from being dead.
Yeah. Rock and roll is never dead, never dead. I see it right now. I think it's coming back bigger than ever, because rock and roll, like, what is rock about? For me, it's not just music, it's a lifestyle, right? It's about live, it's about love, it's about freedom, it's about, you know, letting yourself go, having a good time, and especially during Corona in these times, you know, we got rid of, you know, we didn't have a lot of freedoms, we had a lot of restrictions and all that stuff. That's why I think rock and roll will be coming back stronger than ever, because people are craving for, you know, just having a good time, and that's what rock and roll is about.
So you're a heavy music guy. Like, is it strictly that you're working with rock, hard rock, like metal, that kind of stuff? Like, what genres matter to you?
Yeah, I'm from a metal and rock background. So I started in the music industry for Napalm Records, right? And then I moved over to Wacken Open Air Festival. And that's the biggest heavy metal festival in the world. So they also have a booking. Exactly.
Okay.
I worked the last 4 years for Wacken Open Air, for their booking agency. And then I moved now to Schubert Music. And Schubert Music is doing all kinds of genre. So we don't have any limitation to any genre. We're doing David Hasselhoff and Die Krupps, for example.
Actually, I heard David Hasselhoff was huge in Germany, actually.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Go ahead.
No, all good. And in my heart, I'm rock and roll. That's my personal favorite genre. I'm just a rock and roller, right? I love everything what comes with rock and roll. But working in the music industry, I also love pop. I also love some hip hop tunes. So I'm not working for Schubert Music. I'm not limited to rock music. Booking wise, it's just easier booking, you know, because I have experience in doing, you know, all these venues, all these partners I'm working with coming out of the, you know, rock and metal scene. But at the moment, we are looking also into a pop artist and trying to, you know, set up something cool for a pop artist, which I really dig. So I'm not limited, just my heart beats for rock and roll music.
Yeah. You know, yeah, because if there is some kind of pop, like, I mean, over here in, excuse me, in Taiwan, especially, like, it's, you know, the government wants the country to be bilingual by 2030, which I'm not really sure is going to be possible. But the thing is, like, there are some labels here emerging now with huge artists that are actually bilingual in English and, you know, Mandarin. And I'm just like, you know, the thing is, like Taiwan artists really aren't out there in the world. Well, I mean, this goes along mostly like in East Asia, and I mean, most of all of Asia, actually, you know, we just don't see a lot of Asian artists inside of the popular scene in Europe or North America for some reason. So I'm always,
I've never seen a Chinese band, right? Or a Japanese band. It's very raw over here. Very raw.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I mean, the thing is, like, but I think there's mega opportunity. Like, you know, a lot of North American companies and European companies, they know the audiences in Asia, they know the populations in Asia, and they're becoming very interested in Asia. And I'm just, you know, I'm just wondering, like, man, like, there's so much opportunity, I think, for bartering and trading, because, you know, like, a lot of companies here really want to get their artists built inside of Europe to make them even bigger here, you know what I mean? So there's lots of opportunity, I think, especially for guys like you and in your business to kind of, you know, think outside that box and try to, you know, kind of swing deals with guys like over here and stuff like that. Yeah. I think it's exciting.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. China. I was dealing a lot with China. I had several tours in China. For me, China was, you know, speaking now before Corona, right? Mm. Corona, especially China and all that stuff, is very hard. You know, one of my partners does now something completely different, not working in the music industry anymore.
Wow.
But China was, like, for me, the most developing market and possibilities, you know, because there are so many people, they're growing and growing. And that's why all these major labels, you know, like Universal, they got branches in China, right?
Yeah.
In Shanghai and Peking and those. So that's the reason. Because I compared always China with us, like, in the 60s. or 70s. China. I mean, I was living 1 year in China working for Siemens. So okay. I know the culture there. I was, you know, and it was in 2011 or 2012. We got these promoter deals that we got hired to go to a club to get drinks for free to show the Chinese people how to celebrate.
Wow. Right?
How to dance, how to behave in a club.
How to have a good time.
Yeah. How to have a good time.
Socialize. Exactly. Because, yeah.
Because they are not used to it, right? They don't have these club culture, these concert culture. It's very, very in the beginning. They have karaoke. Of course, the bigger artists like Elton John and all that stuff, they're filling out big arenas as well. But I say the culture, right? And culture always starts from the scratch, right? Having small clubs, playing small bands all over the country, like we have it in Germany and in all Europe, USA, everywhere in the Western world, but they don't know it by now. So that's why I see a lot of possibilities in China and India as well.
Oh yeah.
And of course, Japan is the third biggest music market worldwide. So they have already—
And they still buy CDs there. They still buy CDs, right?
Yeah. That's why they are the third biggest market, because it's expensive and they buy it. Mm. They sell. That's why a lot of artists do special editions for the Japanese or the Taiwan market, right?
And let me ask you about this, since you're really focused on being a live guy. How much does the virtual marketplace on the internet play a role? Like, how much does that play a role in your life as a booking agent?
It plays a big role. It is. It's a big role, because it's a presentation of your band, right? Mm-hmm. The first thing I do, if someone sends me a mail or I hear an artist's name or whatever, I go online, check Facebook page. First I check Facebook, then I check Instagram, then I check YouTube. Then I put Google and type the name in and see if some music magazine's writing about them. Right. Wow. So the online presentation, every A&R does it, right? That's why bands sometimes ask me, what do we need to send you, right, that you can check us out and all that stuff? And bands are still living like it feels like they're living in the 80s. Some, they're sending huge mails with, you know, EPKs and all that stuff. It's not necessary at all. You need to have a good Facebook page. Let's see how long it continues with Facebook. But at the moment, Facebook is the thing where you check at first, right? How many times do they post? How active you are, right? How many likes you get? How many comments you get? That's very important indicator, right? How active your fans are. And then you see, check the other, you know, platforms, Instagram, YouTube. And that's very, very important. Not only the business side, so the business people like me looking at it, also the fans, of course, right? Mm. It's, you know, if you want to sell it big, you also need to sell it big on Facebook and all these things, right? You make, if you just, you know, for example, don't have a nice poster or don't, you know, put much effort in your, you know, representation of your band on these platforms, and it's very easy to make a good representation on these platforms, right? It's not a lot of work, but if you don't have a nice representation even on these platforms, I mean, then we're talking again about hobby versus taking it seriously.
Right, exactly.
And even for me, a homepage, I rarely go on homepages, right? That's the fourth or fifth step I'm going into. First thing is really Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. That's very, very, very important. And speaking of these things, and that's a big difference from back in the days to nowadays, the tasks and the things you need to do, you know, just 100 times bigger than it was back in the days. Back in the days, you had the music magazines and you needed to do, you know, interviews and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And nowadays, you need to take care of everything what happens, you know. Like, the tasks are like 10 times bigger than they used to be.
Yeah, before
ten
it was
times
about,
more,
yeah,
not bigger.
It was
ten
about
times
radio,
more.
Videos, and playing live. And now it's like it's about Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Yeah. You know, yeah. It's just da 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 da. Yeah,
and not like speaking of TikTok. I mean, TikTok gets now the new A&R-ing tool, right? Where major labels find their new artists, and TikTok is a lot of work. Right. And it's not like just we had a conversation with one of my bands last week. Right. They said, yeah, TikTok is the new thing. Let's get something going. And then it's not enough to just have a TikTok profile and all that stuff. You really need to put active effort. And it's a lot of effort. TikTok is a lot of effort, time consuming channel. Right. But you need to, you know, take it seriously. Otherwise, you won't make a difference to the, you know, bands who take it seriously. Yeah.
And you got to create all that content too. Like TikTok is like content. So you have to create all this video content. I mean, yeah, you probably got to brainstorm things, but I guess it's like you're building a story across all these platforms and you're trying to, I guess, sell it to guys like you that, you know, there's something important going on and, you know, you got a message or something that you want to get out there for sure. We'll wrap this up, Michael. I think you've said a lot of important things, but before I do, where do you think this is all headed? Like you're saying you see a real rise. You think that the rock industry is going to start growing more. Where do you think that's going to be? Do you think it's going to be in a place like Germany? Like where do you, like in 5 to 10 years from now, do you still see like the United States being like the capital of like, you know, the big bands, or do you see any big changes in the horizon?
I mean, especially in rock, I mean, USA is still the market you want to, you know, you want to be part of when you have a rock band, right? Because USA is still like the culture capital in the world capital. It's like that. It is like there's all the movies, all the music, you know, all the, you know, big major stars, labels, they're aiming for the US market. It's the biggest music market. So of course, you know, very, very hard that this will change. And I really hope, I'm a positive guy, right? I always optimism and always positive. And I think after Corona, and I really hope so, that culture and music is valued bigger than it was before, right? We have seen like with, it started with the MP3 and then the downloads. I downloaded myself, right? But I downloaded it illegal myself. I mean, everybody did it. I did it massively, right? I never bought an album anymore. I downloaded everything.
It was like the whole analog of like every band. So it'd be like, not just one Jimi Hendrix song, like everything he's ever done, you know, in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. With the streaming, very nice, right? I have a Spotify abonnement paying 120 euros a year, right? I never spent 120 euros back in the days, you know, per year for music. Never. Because it was, you know, it started like when I was like 16, 17, you know, when I really digged into music and wanted to have all these catalogs and explore new bands. Then Napster was there, or Kaiser, or whatever. So you downloaded, as you just said, the whole catalog. Spent 0 euros. Now I spend 120 euros a year for Spotify. Streaming, speaking of streaming, and this is what I really hope, the turnover of streaming, that it will be distributed more equally to artists, right? And I really hope that the advertising money, when, you know, big companies realize that you can target on YouTube, on Spotify, your target group, which you want to reach, right? You can directly target it on a digital basis. If big companies like Dr. Edgar or all these, you know, bigger ones put more money on Spotify, YouTube streaming advertisement, I think, you know, it will increase, the money will be increased. And then I really hope that in the end, the artists will get paid better, right? And that music is more valuable before than it was, you know, like prior Corona, that everything is still for free. artists, you know, don't get anything out of Spotify and co. I hope it will change. Let's hope for the best.
I had a fascinating conversation about Spotify actually a while back with a guy that used to bring the big bands, in, like the big American bands, into Portugal. And he was talking about that event that had happened. And what it was, like, the music industry was chasing down Napster and these companies, you know, trying to sue them, trying to destroy them to get this whole thing off. But they weren't looking at solutions. And it was a totally different, it came out of a, like, left field. Spotify came out of left field of a company or a guy, these people that had nothing to do with the music industry at all. Yeah. You know, and they said, hey, look, we solved your problem. Yeah. And it seems like Spotify is actually more of a, like, it's just something that's normal now. It's not that it's like the best idea. It's not even close to being the best idea. It's just normal now because it was the first idea. You know, so it's
funny shit. I mean, weird. All these major labels, right? They were so busy with suing Napster and all these stuff, they forgot about it to find a solution. They needed to come a company like Spotify to show the major label how it works.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Maybe Spotify will become sooner or later a label, right? Well, maybe Spotify will sign bands.
The power they have to do stuff like that is insane. I mean, look, they are the platform. You know, like if you, it's like talking about like if YouTube became like, you know, oh, we're gonna start being a label. We're just gonna, you know, these bands are gonna show. Because I mean, as a showcase guy, like educator, that kind of thing, I'm always telling bands like YouTube. You know, like YouTube is where you're at because that's where you can actually make the most money. It's visual. It's also audio. It's everything. But I mean, yeah. Spotify is so normalized in our life, and that it's just so weird to get that. You know what I mean? It just became like something. It's like eating McDonald's. Like, yeah, oh, it's going to kill you. Oh, really? Okay. Like, they're just, you know? Like, yeah, you'll die if you eat that. Oh, that's nice. You know? So,
I don't think that labels will become obsolete, right? I think you always need to have, you know, someone who has experience and someone who needs to work it, right? And someone with money and all that stuff to push certain things. But Spotify could be the next label, right? Why not Spotify? Maybe they, you know, set up a new department called whatever, Spotify Records, and then they, you know, have all the power they need in-house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd be so something.
It will be exciting to see. It will be exciting to see the future, especially after Corona. Especially after Corona. I really hope for the golden 20s, right?
Right. Well, Michael, I got to tell you, it was absolutely refreshing and really nice to talk to you. I'm definitely going to send you an invite to when things open up again in Newfoundland and also in Sweden. I'd love to have you there and talk to, you know, up-and-coming people, man. And share your knowledge. And, you know, thanks for your spirit and thanks for your energy, man. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, man. Thanks. First interview I've done in fucking ages, man. I forgot about it. It makes fun to talk about music industry. I mean, this is what we love, right? And that is very cool sometimes to talk about it, also to vision, to see the future and all that stuff. And, you know, let's hope for the best.
Yeah,
we will stick around.
Okay, Michael, take care.
Thanks, man. Okay. Ellen, thanks for the support, also for the Thunder Mother Girls, right?
Absolutely.
Really much appreciated.
Absolutely, man. Take care.
Enjoy Monday. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.